Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, scientists have studied the relationship between wolves and moose on Isle Royale for more than 60 years. And today we'll take a look at a book about the earliest research that went on there. David Meach, our guest today, he is a senior research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey. He's an adjunct professor in the departments of fisheries, wildlife, and conservation biology, as well as the Department of Ecology, Evolution, and Behavior, both at the University of Minnesota. He's the author of a number of books and founder of the International Wolf Center in Ely, Minnesota. And Dave's latest book is Wolf Island, Discovering the Secrets of a Mythic Animal. So what would you like to know about wolf behavior? What questions do you have about Isle Royale? I hope you'll join in. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And David Meach, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Glad to be on.
Tell you what, you know, before we start, probably everybody listening has heard the term Isle Royale and knows it's an island, but probably most, like me, did not know a lot about the island. So could you describe the island for us? Give us an idea of the size, what it looks like.
Sure. It's a quite a long, 45-mile long island that sits about 15 to 20 miles southeast of the north shore of Lake Superior. So it is part of the state of Michigan, but it's much closer to Minnesota. It's, as I said, 45 miles long, 9 miles wide at its widest point, and encompasses about 210 square miles. And it's a world of its own out there. It's a national park, Isle Royale National Park, and a total wilderness, and a great place for wolves and moose.
And they probably got there by crossing over from the mainland during the winter, I would expect.
Well, we think, and of course this is all historical, so we're not certain just how this happened, but the current view is that the moose probably swam from the mainland. The closest point is 15 miles. The wolves very probably came over on the ice.
Well, it's really a fascinating book that you have. I enjoyed reading it very much. And maybe you can start by telling us how you became involved in studying the wolves on Isle Royale back in the 50s.
Sure. I was an undergraduate student at Cornell University in New York State, and a wildlife student, wildlife ecology I was studying. And I had done some work during the summer and also during various vacations throughout the year in the Adirondack Mountains of New York State, wilderness area there. And I had somewhat distinguished myself with the various professors there because of that work. For example, during the summer, I was an assistant on a black bear research project where we live trap bears and put ear tags on them, that kind of thing. So when a professor at Purdue University, Professor Dr. Durward L. Allen, obtained a National Science Foundation grant to do a study of wolves and moose on Isle Royale, he asked me to do it for graduate work. And, of course, I was very interested in large carnivores. I'd been working, as I say, I'd been working already with bears, and had experience in the wilderness, so Durward felt that I would be a good candidate for this study. And I jumped at the chance, and I said, yes, certainly.
And you spent a lot of time there. You were part of summer and part of winter, and maybe explain why you did it that way.
Well, the island is closed for to the public. Actually, there's no one out there from about, used to be from about Labor Day until about Memorial Day. And so mainly it's a summer, it's a national park for summer visitors. And that's still the case. There's really no one out there during most of the winter except the researchers. And so we joined in with the tourists during the summer. And so I was there working on the basically traveling the trails. I put 1,500 miles on in four summers there, actually. And then in the winter, most of the time it was from about early February to about middle March. I had three winters there with a small crew, a pilot that flew the small aircraft that we used, and one or two people from the National Park Service, and sometimes Dr. Allen himself. And that was pretty much it for the whole period during the winter. And we used that aircraft to follow the wolves around and watch what they did.
Yeah, it was fascinating, that plane. I thought, I don't know if I'd want to ride in that plane a whole lot. It's a pretty small plane. Murray, I believe.
It's a small plane, but it's extremely useful and valuable for aerial observation because it's so light and it's very maneuverable. And we were able to just stay above the wolves as they traveled and watch them hunt, watch whatever way they were behaving when they were out on the ice. And they traveled along the edge of the island, along the shoreline, a great deal. So they were quite visible then. And even when they crossed through the forested area, we could see them from the aircraft. So I got to watch them chase moose and sometimes kill them, and then other times when the wolves fed on the moose, we got to watch that and how they behaved afterwards and plot their travels across the island and that type of thing.
Yeah, and also you'd sometimes land after a kill and go to the kill to collect information.
Oh, yes, yes. We needed to look at the remains of as many of these kills as we could in order to see the age of the moose they killed. And incidentally, I should tell you as background that one of the big advantages of the study on the island is that the only large mammal there was the moose. There were no deer, for example, or elk or anything else. And the only large predator there was the wolf. So that's unique in terms of other wolf prey systems. For example, in Minnesota, the wolves prey on both moose and deer. But on Isle Royale, it was a very simple system, wolves versus moose. During summer, they also got to feed on, the wolves got to feed on beavers. But as far as their main hoofed animal prey, that was a moose. So when we followed the wolves around and watch them hunt, it was always moose that they were chasing.
One of the things that interested me, but you know, the packs, there was a pack of, 15? And then
yes,
a couple of smaller packs.
Yes, there's a pack of three as well, yes.
And you'd think that, as you write in your book, you'd think that 15 wolves after a moose, that moose is going to lose every time.
Well,
that
yes,
certainly wasn't the case.
I think that's what everybody thought before we were able to do these studies and actually watch what happened. It would certainly seem like 15 wolves could take down just about anything they wanted to.
Yeah, but that wasn't the case. And often they would chase the a moose, and then the moose might turn around and sort of challenge them, and they'd... Well, describe what would happen then.
Well, then the wolves would kind of size things up, and in just about every case where the moose stood its ground, the wolves gave up and went on and went after some other moose. And that was a big finding because, as I say, It was counter to what we would have thought, that surely with 15 wolves they could take this thing. But in fact, that's not what they thought. So they turn around and leave and try to find one that wouldn't challenge them. And those would be the ones they'd end up killing.
Yeah, and the moose that were killed, were they typically older? Were they typically...
Either the calves themselves, which at that time of year, of course, about would be somewhere around 8 months old, but they'd still weigh around 300 pounds or so, and they'd have a mother with them that could protect them. But the wolves would manage at times to catch those calves, and the other really big group of moose that they were able to kill were the old ones, generally wolves, moose over 9 or 10 years old.
And they were...
And I should also say, sometimes they would get animals that were debilitated for some other reason other than just old age.
Yeah, occasionally. And so how many moose were, when you were there researching, and you were able by flying in the wintertime to be able to determine approximate number of moose that were on the island?
Sure. We counted the moose, and at that time it was 500 or 600 or so. Over the years since then, it's varied considerably. It rarely has gotten down that low again, sometimes been up to as many as 1,500 or so. It varied considerably. I should mention that study after I left, which my last year on it was 1961. That study continued since then, and it is still ongoing. And over the 60 years of the study, the moose population has fluctuated a great deal.
It has indeed. Our guest today is David Meach. He's a senior research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, and his latest book is Wolf Island, Discovering the Secrets of a Mythic Animal. Fascinating book, and I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. We'll take some of those in just a minute. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mealer, Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer here. We're talking with our guest, David Meach. He is the author of Wolf Island, Discovering the Secrets of a Mythic Animal. He has spent his graduate work studying the wolves on Isle Royal, and his book is a fascinating description of what went on while he was there, and also his findings from the research that he did over about 3 years or so period, or 4 years period. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. John in Madison has a question for you, David. Let's go there. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Nice to hear your voice. And David, thanks for being on. I'm fascinated by what you're talking about in Isle Royale. But my question is, I think maybe a little bit more general regarding wolves. I have a lot of relatives up in northern Wisconsin, and they're all convinced that the deer population has been really kind of decimated by wolves. So I'd like to hear what your research says about that, and I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for calling. David, comment?
This is something we hear a great deal. In fact, when I was starting to work on Isle Royal, some of the lay people there were workmen of various sorts and all, they were pretty convinced the wolves were going to wipe out the moose there. And wherever I work with wolves, and I've worked with them, of course, for 63, 64 years now, in many different places, and it's pretty common for lay people to think that that wolves are going to wipe out their prey. However, if they did, of course, the wolves themselves would die off. And it turns out that in most places, wolves, sure, they kill a lot of members of prey populations, but generally take the older ones or the ones that are debilitated in some way, the ones that are least dangerous, I should say, because there's a lot of cases where wolves get killed, they try to take prey, including even when they try to kill white-tailed deer. I have good records of white-tailed deer killing wolves that were trying to attack them. So it's not easier for wolves, and what that means then, in terms of the population of their prey, is that wolves end up harvesting a certain proportion of those prey, but generally the prey animals breed fast enough to more than make up for what the wolves kill. It's a kind of a common human belief that if wolves are out there taking the same animals that humans want to take, if the humans don't get a good share of them, that the reason is the wolves. And yet, in most places, that is rarely true.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if the Wisconsin wolves, we can just mention for a minute, if you do the kind of the math on the number of deer that our wolf packs in Wisconsin would kill, cars kill way more deer than wolves do.
Surely, and human hunters do as well. And while you know there may be local areas, and I actually have studied one of those in a wilderness area in part of Minnesota, the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. There was a period when wolves did wipe out a small population of deer, but it was only like an area of 40 miles across or so that was really quite unique in terms of its having very poor habitat, and there was a series of 7 severe winters, and during that time the wolves were able to really reduce the number of deer there. But that's pretty much a record. Almost every other place, wolves and deer have continued to live, basically for as long as they've been there.
Yeah, and there, as you say, there were no no deer on Isle Royale. You know, as I read your book, one of the things that kind of I kept thinking about was, why didn't he use his cell phone? Oh, wait a minute, there weren't any cell phones. It was a different time in terms of technology, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. We, for example, didn't even have communication with our base at one end of the island. In other words, there was a, as I mentioned, we had some Park Service personnel, at least one there with us every winter, and that person did have radio contact with the shore. But we did not have radio contact with that person. So, for example, if we were 10, 20 miles away from that base camp, we had no communication with the camp itself. So, there were no cell phones. There weren't even we didn't even have good radio communication.
And yeah, I actually got to spend at least 2 summers. You got married just before you went, or maybe it was between season 1 and 2, and Betty Ann got to spend a couple of summers with you there, and pregnant, as a matter of fact.
Yes, we lived on a small, during the first summer I was a bachelor, second summer I was married, and lived on an adjacent island. Actually, Isle Royale is a big archipelago. It has, 200, 300 other islands around it, here and there, little tiny ones and all, and some larger ones. And we lived on one of the adjacent islands, about 2 or 3 miles off the shore of Isle Royale itself, in a former commercial fisherman's building. And so we got along fine there. And, of course, I had a outboard motorboat, and cruise around the island that way, and every now and then come back to the island and some home cooking and that kind of thing.
And you became, here you are a graduate student, but you probably became more knowledgeable, well, you did become more knowledgeable about wolves in general, and certainly the wolves on Isle Royale, than probably anybody else in those 3 years or so that you were there.
Oh yeah, for sure. There wasn't, there really wasn't very much wolf research done at that time. There were a few other studies. Adolf Murray had studied wolves in Mount McKinley National Park, published a monograph in 1944. Sigurd Olsen in Minnesota had studied wolves in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area and published papers in 1938. And then Milt Stenlund in Minnesota published a small monograph in 1955. And there were one or two studies in Canada, but that was pretty much it by the time I went to Isle Royale. So, I did learn quite a bit about wolves that had not been known before.
We have Dave from Utica wondered what was the largest wolf you've ever seen?
The largest wolf that I had ever seen was probably, of course, when we talk about large wolves, we usually talk in terms of weights, and just seeing a wolf without being able to weigh it doesn't give me much to go on. So about the best thing I can, the best way I can answer that is the heaviest wolf that I know of in terms of a record was about 172 pounds, but that's a real extreme case. I would say any wolf over 135 would be a real record. And wolves, like for example on Isle Royale, I never got to weigh one there, of course, but they are similar to the wolves in the Great Lakes area, Minnesota, Ontario, that area. And those wolves run around for the males somewhere around 100 pounds on average, and females somewhere around 80 pounds on average for a good healthy wolf.
One of the things that intrigued me was kind of your discussion and talking from time to time through the book about the pack and sort of the nature of the pack, the social nature of the pack. Can you describe that?
Well, yeah, a pack is really a family. And the best analogy, really, to a pack is a human family. So they have a pair of parents who then produce offspring each year. And the average litter size is about six. And those offspring, as they mature, they start to mature somewhere around 2 years of age. And some of them, just depending on their nutritional condition and all, don't really mature sexually till about 4 years of age, but somewhere between two and four, as they begin to mature, most of those wolves will leave the pack and go off and disperse and try to find a member of the opposite sex. Both sexes disperse, and they find a member of the opposite sex somewhere else, and pair bond, set up a territory, and produce a litter of pups and start a new pack. That's how that works. Well, so the pack itself then is the adult pair, the parents, and then their offspring of the first year, which would be the pups. But they, by the time they're even 9 or 10 months old, they are large enough to look like adults, but we call them pups in their first year. So they are with the parents, and then there's usually some offspring from the previous year. Those would be the yearlings, and then quite possibly, and in the case of Isle Royale, certainly some members that were in their second year, which would be the two-year-olds, and that would make up the 15. And that would mean that at least some point there was a pretty high survival of the pups and the yearlings, and therefore they all added up to a pack of 15.
Pat in Duluth, Minnesota, has a question. It kind of relates to what we were just talking about here. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is about the reintroduction of wolves onto Isle Royale, which happened in the last few years or so, I think.
Yes.
And I have two questions. The first one, and I love wolves and nature. Why was it necessary to do that? And then the second question, if that had to be done, why not take an already established wolf pack rather than, it seemed like they took wolves from different packs, and I know some of those died, and so would an already established pack have done better in that?
Sure. Okay. The first question, they had to reintroduce wolves because the wolves that were had been there, for example, when I was there, and then their offspring, eventually they became fairly highly inbred, and that caused a lot of issues with the population, and it began to die off. And then there was a the population got down to about a dozen or so. And incidentally, the average population over all these years on Isle Royale tended to be somewhere around 22, 23, 24, something like that each year. But the population dropped to around 12, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And then three of those, including a breeding pair, had an accident. They fell through the ice on a old abandoned mine pit that were there. And so that dropped the population to nine. And then the remaining nine were never really able to replenish the population and kept dwindling to about two. And at that point, it was pretty clear that those wolves were going to go extinct. So the Park Service made a decision that they really should reintroduce a new population there. Now, the second question, there are several ways of reintroducing animals, but one of the prime considerations in a reintroduction is to make sure that you have a diverse set of genetics. And if a intact pack were placed on the island, the genetic diversity would be pretty low because they'd all be related except the breeding pair itself, which would have come from different packs. But all the offspring, of course, would have been related to those animals. And also a second consideration is that trying to capture a whole pack of wolves is very, very difficult. It would have taken quite a long time, some years probably, before they could have done that. So they opted to get a wide diversity of genes and took animals from northern Minnesota, northern Michigan, and part southern Ontario, and an island out in the lake there, Michipicoten Island. And they just figured that that would be a wide enough diversity so that that population they formed would be viable for a great number of years.
Yeah. Thanks for that question, Pat. Norm in Oneida County, it's your turn. Hi, Norm.
Yeah, good morning. You were here at Tree Haven in Wisconsin.
Say again?
Yeah.
You were here in Wisconsin at Tree Haven.
Oh, at Tree Haven. Did you visit Tree Haven, David?
I don't recall that, but it's possible. I've been in many
a lot
different
of places.
I'm not sure I've been there or not.
Okay, my question was, I'm sure this is a fact, when the wolf population drops, the vegetation devoured by moose is extensive. Is that right?
Would you repeat that question?
Yeah,
sure.
When the population of wolves drops down, my understanding is the vegetation is really decimated by the overabundance of moose.
You mean when the wolf population dropped, the moose began increasing and started basically damaging the vegetation? Is that
eating
what you're
them,
saying?
Yeah, eating themselves out of house and home, sort of.
Yes. Now, they didn't get too far with that, but because the wolves, you know, over all those 60 years were keeping the moose in check. But in the last 10 years or so, with the few wolves that were there, it is true that the moose population increased and started damaging quite a bit of the vegetation there. Yes. Overeating it, kind of.
Yeah. Jeff in Grand Marsh, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, one of my questions was answered already, but did the populate when the wolf population got up to 15 or 16, did the moose population drop any? And perhaps vice versa.
Yes, if you look at, and you can go online and Google wolves and moose of Isle Royale, and there's a wonderful website, Google wolves and moose of Isle Royale, and there's a wonderful, not just the website, but all it has, along a graph of the moose population changes and the wolf population changes, and it's certainly true that over those years, and we're talking about 60 years now, the moose population would increase, then often the wolf population would increase as well. But then as the wolf population got pretty high, then the moose population would tend to drop. And you can see these cycles in this nice 60-year graph that they have on that website. But there's not a simple answer as to what the effect of wolves is on the moose. Sometimes they are able to keep the moose population in check for a while, and sometimes they are not. And much of that depends on the winter weather, the snow conditions, because when you get adverse, or let's just say deep snow for a few years in a row, that can be pretty hard on the moose population, but then that allows the wolves to kind of cash in and kill more moose because the moose are in poor condition. And so these cycles that you'll see in that graph are modulated quite a bit by the winter weather.
And speaking of weather, you do, near the end of your book, you talk about ticks, and climate change has an impact, probably having an impact on the island too, on the island.
Yes, climate change has several impacts. In fact, some I'm sure that we don't even know of, but a couple that are quite relevant is that as the summers get warmer and warmer and all, and there's a winter tick that gets on moose, and it can be hundreds or tens of thousands of these ticks on moose. As they as the weather gets warmer, that can facilitate the reproduction of these ticks, and can help them really hurt the moose more than if the weather was not as warm. That's one thing. And then another effect of climate change can be the degree to which Lake Superior freezes over, because at times the lake does, and during those times it's possible for wolves either to leave the island. We don't have many good records of that. There is one or two, also wolves can get on the island. There are some good records of that. And that's relevant because they can help outbreed the wolf population and add genetic diversity to it. So with warming weather, one could predict that there would be fewer winters when the lake would freeze over enough for wolves to get there from the mainland. On the other hand, with warming weather or with climate change itself, one of the other characteristics of climate change is that you get more extremes in weather. And more extremes can mean that some winters are extreme enough so that the lake does freeze over. And in fact, if you look at the last 10 years, there seems to have been an abnormal number of times when the lake has frozen over. So these are all possible you know, changes based on climate change.
Yeah. Lisa in Whitefish Bay, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I had just listened to Chapter a Day, and the book was Little Hawk and the Lone Wolf, which was, as I understood it, a true memoir by a person here in Wisconsin who had befriended a wild wolf who almost was like a pet for him after a while, although he didn't live in his home or anything. Does that happen periodically, that wild wolves and people form those types of relationships?
No. No, that would be very, very rare. That's very unusual. It's not anything that would ordinarily happen. There was a case in Alaska, a wolf called Romeo. In fact, that's the name of the book, A Wolf Called Romeo, where an apparent wild wolf seemed to have befriended an apparent wild wolf. We're not sure that wolf, it could have been one that someone had raised from, you know, in captivity and was tame and then got away or something. We're not sure how that happened, but it'd be very, very rare for that to happen.
Hmm. Peg emailed and wondered if any researchers consulted with local Native Americans about their experiences, knowledge of, and history with wolves.
Yes, the Native Americans, of course, do have different tribes have different attitudes towards wolves, but the local tribes tend to look at the wolf as almost as a brother. And there are the tribes themselves, for example, I know in Minnesota, have their own biologists who are studying wolves.
So there's definitely a lot of that. Mark in Wisconsin Rapids wondered if wolves ever kill for sport. He knows sheep farmers who think that's the case.
If wolves ever kill which?
For sport.
Well, whether they kill for sport. Well, that's a common misconception. And here's what happens. It's so hard for wolves to kill most of their prey that when they do get an opportunity to kill one, they try to take that opportunity. I never got to mention the success rate on Isle Royale, but it was about 7% during winter. Only about 7% of the moose that the wolves got to chase did they ever get a chance to kill, 7 or 8%. Now, if they get into a flock of sheep or something, that's a different story, and the sheep are much more vulnerable, so it's an opportunity for wolves, and they take that opportunity. Now, if humans left them alone during that process, which, of course, doesn't happen if they're killing sheep, but if they did, the wolves would continue to eat all of the sheep they killed. And we have actually followed something similar in Denali Park in Alaska, where because of weather conditions, wolves were able to kill a large number of caribou at the same time. And it's called surplus killing. And we watched over, we never went down on the ground and checked it. We kept watching from the air, and the wolves kept feeding on them for weeks and weeks. With a flock of sheep, of course, humans would intervene, and it would look like the wolves killed all these sheep just for fun. But in fact, they killed them to eat. It's just that it's kind of like the story of a weasel in a hen house. I mean, if a weasel gets in a hen house, it kills a heck of a lot of chickens. Well, that's the same reason. Weasels have trouble finding prey they can kill, but when they find a batch like that are very vulnerable, a bunch of chickens cooped up, they take advantage of it because that's just the way they're programmed. But it's not for sport. And with wolves, when wolves are trying to kill something, they are in danger. And as I mentioned earlier, all kinds of wolves have been killed by their prey. So they don't, it's not a matter of fun. It's a matter of we got to eat, so we have to do the best we can to find an animal that we can kill without being killed ourselves.
Yeah. Well, this has been fascinating talking with you, Dave. You have a virtual book launch you have scheduled for October 27th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I think that's correct.
And how do we, how would people get involved with that
they can get involved in that by Googling the International Wolf Center, wolf.org. And there's a notice on there as to how to get involved in that. And it's a matter of coming on. And this book that we did was with professional writer Greg Brining. And Greg and I, during that session, are going to bat some questions and answers back and forth.
Now, well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today, David. I really enjoyed your book, and I hope a lot of people get a chance to read it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and it's my pleasure.
David Meach, our guest today, senior research scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey, adjunct professor at the University of Minnesota, and the author of a number of books. He's a good writer, and he was also founder of the International Wolf Center in Ely, Minnesota. And as a matter of fact, we're going to continue talking about wolves with the director of the International Wolf Center, Grand Spickelmeyer. That coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.